There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Bubba the Bat Flip, episode 32. Got a fun one on tap for you tonight. Got some players that we're both hopeful on. Guys, I guess, that we're targeting quite a bit, that we're hoping produce in a big way, that aren't the Captain Obvious picks out there a little later in drafts. Take some listener questions and more. You can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how are we doing?
Hey, Bubba, we're doing okay tonight. You know, it's a little bit of a sad night in my household. John Prine, who I listened to growing up, have a lot of really fond family memories of kind of just listening to him in the living room on family trips and stuff like that. He passed away today. So feeling a little sad about that. I know that we're all kind of dealing with a little bit of our own grief here as a result of COVID-19, whether that's because of, you know, knowing somebody who has passed away or has gotten ill, whether it's just kind of the anxiety and the way that life has changed dramatically over the last little bit. I know we're all kind of working through that. So I guess his death hit me a little bit hard this afternoon or this evening when I found out about it, but it's been nice putting on some tunes, listening to some of my favorite songs of his. Has definitely been helpful in that situation. And we all have kind of the ways we get away from the real world and the grief that we're all working with. And I think fantasy baseball is obviously one of those for me. So really excited to be on the podcast with you tonight. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Just day to day, had some doctor's appointments today with the wife and doing work and whatnot. So, you know, just living the dream, nothing, just trying to stay safe. That's the best we can do right now. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I've never had to use so much sanitizer in my truck in my life. Let's put it that way.
For sure. We're all experts at hand washing, and we all know exactly which products have the right enough of certain chemicals to kill the coronavirus. Yep. So we're in good shape.
Yeah, things I never thought I'd need to worry about. Here we are. So let's have some fun talking some fantasy baseball. It's a list we made a few weeks ago, but we've had a lot of listener questions talking 1994 last week with Brock, which was a blast. But we're talking about some hopeful players. We've got three infielders, three outfielders each to talk about, and then and some pitchers as well, three pitchers each. So total of like 18 players or so. We have some listener questions. So Toby, kick us off. Rowdy Tellez is your number one.
Yeah, Rowdy Tellez is my number one. And this is a guy who, I don't know how much I talked about him kind of throughout the offseason. I think I mentioned him. I think we discussed him on some of our position previews. But he's a guy, as the seasons move forward, I like him more and more. And I guess not the season has moved forward, but as the season got closer and closer and now seems to get further and further away, he was a guy that I liked more and more. I think he was having a really nice spring. And based on some early reports in Blue Jays camp, you know, it sounded like Teoscar Hernandez was actually going to start in the outfield for the Blue Jays, which might open up some DH opportunities for Rowdy Tellez, as well as maybe some first base opportunities with Travis Shaw in there most of the time. So I really liked the playing time situation for him. He was going pretty late in drafts, but I think more than anything, I really liked what I saw when he came back to the Blue Jays toward the end of last year. He does not have good plate discipline, but there was some improvements there as the season progressed in those last games. That last 34 games, something like that.
When he got called up, he played like 32 to 34 games once he got back up in the bigs, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, and he was much better. So improvements in plate discipline, improvements in exit velocity. So his average exit velocity over his last 50 batted balls was 94.1 miles per hour, which is extremely elite. And then his hard hit rate over that same stretch was 54% by StatCast metrics. So 54% of his batted balls were at 95 miles per hour or higher. And I think when you combine that with an already stellar 8.3% barrels per plate appearance, across the full season, there's a lot to really like there. And I think there's a couple areas where you could see some growth for him. He's definitely a guy who could hit the ball in the air slightly more. And so that's an area where you could see the power tick up a little bit. I don't think we doubt that the power is there, but I think there's a reason to be hopeful in the fact that he might be able to lower that ground ball rate, increase that launch angle, and maybe increase that barrel rate and his home run total. And then the contact rate as well. It's not bad, especially for a guy with kind of his hitting profile. And so I think put that all together, and I think you have a guy who's kind of flying, generally speaking, under the radar, who was almost free in drafts and who I think could really contribute quite a lot. I mean, if you look at, for instance, the bat, you know, they have the batting average pretty low at 243, but the bat projection in 316 plate appearances has him with 14 home runs, 37 runs, 41 RBIs. So, you know, in a full season worth of plate appearances, you're looking at 25 to 30 home runs potentially with his existing skill set. If it improves, you know, maybe that number goes up a little bit. And then you're looking at maybe 80-80 in terms of runs and RBIs. And in a really solid Blue Jays lineup, I think there's a lot to like about Tellez and a lot of reasons to be hopeful on him.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't put him on my list, but I finished writing up three first basemen that could break out, like not just sleepers, like super late picks that might even go undrafted in some leagues. But Tellez was one of the three on that list. And I won't have stats for every guy you talk about, but I have this paper right here because it got published this morning. So yeah, it's right cool. in front of me. And when he got called back up, like you said, he played 33 games after coming up after a month in the minors. So mid-August, he came back up. He hit 226 overall. But if you look at his September, and that's when you're talking about his last 50 at-bats and whatnot. His September, he played 22 games and hit 257 with six homers, 14 RBIs, 11 runs scored, but a 139 WRC+, a 329 ISO, 52% hard hit rate, pulled the ball almost 55% of the time. All things we're looking for with the increased power. And one thing I saw looking at his numbers from 18, 19, even in the first half of 19, his BABIP is atrocious, absolutely atrocious. And that it could be because you would think because a lot of fly balls, but he's a heavy ground ball player. So he's hitting into the shift a lot or hitting weak ground balls. And that's the weird thing about him. He had like last year, the whole year combined, a 40% ground ball rate and a 27.6% fly ball rate. And that's been improving each year. His fly ball rate has improved each year. So if that can keep going in the right direction, the BABIP get just closer to 300. That leads you to your higher average you're speaking of potentially and could lead to much, much more power as the barrel rates, the hard hit rates, everything like you said is phenomenal. And then one thing I'm going to plug, and I'm going to start using it more and more, and I got to keep getting used to it. You know, PitcherList.com has amazing writers, just brilliant people. And I love chatting with them on the show. And last week I had John Metzler on. And, you know, Toby, we use CSW quite a bit, and that's one of their great inventions. John did something that to me, it might seem so simple, but it's so genius because I never thought of it. It's called the ideal contact rate. Have you read up on that at all?
I don't think I read the full article, but I definitely took a look. I think it looked at kind of the six different batted ball types, right? Via StatCast.
Yes, and it shows that there's the six via StatCast, but the three you want are barrels per batted ball event, solids per batted ball event, flares per batted ball event. If you add all together, that's your ideal contact rate, because those are the three things that result in the best possible WOBA, ISO, batting average, etc. The poorly topped, poorly under, poorly weak don't help you at all. But solid, flare, barrel, on average 490 or higher, ISO 630 or higher, so on and so forth, you're getting very productive at bats, barring something crazy, like you hit like a 120 mile an hour line drive straight at the left fielder or something. Like, those are things out of your hands. Long way of telling you, the reason why I wanted to say is Rowdy Tellez, he ranks tied for like 33rd on this list in ideal contact. His ideal contact's 45.5% with a 13% barrel, 7.4% solids, and a 24% flare. What this also tells you is he has the same ideal contact rate as Mookie Betts, Nick Castellanos, 0.1% behind Mitch Garver, and right in front of David Dahl and a few others. So he hits the ball very, very well. It's just a matter of finding a few more holes, maybe turning some flares into some more barrels or solid contact, and next thing you know, it could be huge. So he's really close. Sorry, long way of taking your same player, but wanted to let you know.
I love
Rowdy Tellez.
That's great. And just a couple things to add on to that is, number one, you mentioned Rowdy Tellez and him coming up towards the end of the year. One really great feature that Fangraphs has just added, I don't know if folks saw, but you can actually go to game log or even season stats now and aggregate them manually on the player season stats page or the game log. So with like Rowdy Tellez, I can actually hold, if I just press shift and click on his last game that he played last season, and then the first game since he returned from the minor leagues, I can actually aggregate those stats super quickly. So instead of looking at the range, figuring out the number of games that he played, and then going into the splits tool to see how many, you know, what he was over those games, you can actually do it all in one place. So that's a really nice tool that you kind of reminded me of to highlight. And just by seeing that, yeah, I can see that he had a 111 WRC plus over those last 34 games, and a nice little 338 WOBA, the slug that you mentioned as well. The one question I'd have, I don't know if you know this offhand, with Jonathan's Metzler's article, is one thing that I'm always interested in is what is the how predictive is each metric? And so I know, for instance, that like barrels are very predictive season to season, but I'm not sure how predictive flares and solid contact are. And so that, I guess, would be, I don't know if you know it offhand. I'll definitely go back and read the article because I know he does tremendous work, but it's just as I think about which metrics I want to use moving forward, is just thinking about which ones have the most predictive quality to them.
I don't want to give the wrong answer, so I'm going to say I'm not 100% sure, but I remember because he's got a great chart on this that has he accumulated all the numbers from 2018 and 2019 of all six batted ball types, barrel, flare, all the way down to solid contact. And he put all total numbers, like seven, there was a total of almost 17,741 barrels. So on average, a barrel had a 795 batting average, a 1.939 ISO. He does it for all the stats, WOBA, yep, XWOBA, BACON, all the way down. So the reason why he categorizes them all is, like I told you a second ago, is barrel, flares, and solids. At worst, a solid is a 489 average, a barrel's 795, a flare 659. The ISOs, like a flare's ISO is only 129, but it's BABIP, it's all these other things. So what you're looking at here is if they're a high flare burner guy, but maybe low in barrels and solids, this could be a high batting average guy that's just missing power and could shift real quickly one direction. If he's a huge barrel guy and a solid contact and not really flare burners, it could be all power and little average type situation. But it gives you different guys to target maybe as you're in later in drafts, or if you're looking for guys to maybe break out, that you're saying, can he, you know, like we used to say about Machado forever, can he turn those warning track doubles into home runs? And that's not a flare burner, obviously, but can he change that solid contact into barrels? Stuff like that, because if you look at the, even in this article, he does a phenomenal job like making it as simple as possible. That's why I wanted to talk to him, is he's got just the chart that shows the six type of contacts color coded, and essentially a solid contact is a barrel. It's just, or it's similar to a barrel, but it's either too hit too hard, too soft, or the launch angle is just off, if that makes sense. Like, it has one of the two factors for a barrel, but not the other factor. It's like really close. So it's a really interesting way to showcase it. And to answer your stickiness question, I'm not 100% sure outside of barrels, which we know is very sticky, but we do know that the flare burners is a very good batting average asset. So when you combine them all together, it's kind of the overall contact you're looking for.
Yeah, definitely. I remember looking at the article. I've got it in front of me now. It doesn't look like they have the R squared, so I'd be interested in that just from like a year to year perspective. But as you mentioned, it's phenomenal work. I mean, PitcherList does terrific work, really in-depth articles, and definitely recommend folks. I haven't listened to it yet, your podcast with Jonathan Metzlars, but I'll definitely have to add that to the list, and highly recommend always folks listen to and read PitcherList, because they have a fantastic group of writers who are really passionate about baseball and do some tremendous research.
Yeah, they are good stuff. So let's get on to my first hopeful target, and it is Miguel Sano. Now, I know he's not a super late draft pick like Rowdy Tellez, but I'm hopeful because he hasn't done it yet. It's one of those that every year I want Miguel Sano to be the next best thing, because every year, if you want to drool about a player's StatCast page, Miguel Sano is one of the best ones to drool at. His barrel rate, his exit velocity, his X stats, his X WOBA, and his hard hit rate. He had over a 57% hard hit rate last year. That is asinine. Just ridiculous to hit the ball the way he did. When you look at ideal contact, he's the 23rd, I believe, best ideal contact player in the game. 23rd with almost 47%. I'm not going to go too far into him because we went long on Tellez. We talked about Sano a ton, but even in 105 games last year, 34 home runs, hit .247, 76 runs, 79 RBIs. He just hasn't been able to play a full season. If he can put a full season together, you're locking in 35 plus homers and a decent average. It could be some really good stuff there. So Sano would be my first guy.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick. I mean, all he really needs is health. He was tremendous last year. You mentioned all the StatCast metrics, just hop off the page. He's a guy that I really loved. Early on in the offseason, I feel like I was getting a bunch of shares at him. I worry about the batting average, obviously, given that I play in a lot of overall competitions, but, I could easily see him winning that, home run title, no problem. And
he's also going to get first base eligibility, which is going to be huge.
Oh, absolutely. That's a really good call with Josh Donaldson there. And I know like he had some improvements last year. I feel like, the plate discipline was better last year. The contact rate was down a little bit, but, hard hit rate jumped so much. And, ground ball rate also was down. His lowest in a couple years. So, yep, a lot to like there. Really love the call. I do worry a little bit about where he's going to be in the batting order too. He may be a little bit down there, but I think it's a great call. I think he could be a really tremendous asset. And I'm not sure whether it picked up on the mic or not, but one of my little ones crept out of his bedroom and was having a conversation in the living room. So if that caught on the mic there. That's Milo.
Yeah. No worries. Who's your number two?
So my number two, which probably won't come to a surprise as a surprise to anyone who has been listening to me recently or been seeing some of my draft boards. I guess not recently, but a month or so ago. Brian Anderson is the next one that I really like. I think the key for Anderson, the reason why I'm hopeful is I think the key is his ground ball percentage and his launch angle. Over his last 40 games, his ground ball percentage fell to 39.1%. Now, his career ground ball rate is 49.1%. So just a huge drop right there, hitting the ball in the air a lot more. He has above average batted ball quality. Over his last 50 batted balls, his exit velocity was up at 90.6 miles per hour, which is really solid. 44% hard hit rate based on StatCast and 6% barrels per plate appearance. I believe that's across the full season. And so really, he's got the quality of contact down. I mean, it's not elite quality of contact, but it's good enough. And he makes a lot of contact. Strikeout rate is below league average. And so if he can maintain a lower ground ball percentage and just maintain that quality of contact, you'd see the barrels per plate appearance go up. I think you'd also see him hit a few more home runs, and he's going to play every single day in that Marlins lineup. And he was actually pretty good last year before the injury. I mean, I owned him in a couple places. You know, last year he had 20 home runs, 5 stolen bases, .261 batting average. So again, you know, if he can add a little bit more to that power, you could see 25 to 30 home run power. You could see, you know, five to seven stolen bases, and then not great counting stats because he's in the Marlins lineup, but decent enough. And he's got a very stable profile with that, with a pretty high contact rate and the low strikeout rate. So a lot to like, I think, there. He's also got the dual position eligibility at third base and outfield. He's going to hit in the middle of that lineup. And just based on like valuations, based on where he was going in drafts, which was around pick like 220 or so, he was one of the bigger values, I think, in the draft, as I think like about a $10 to $12 player going in that range. So I really liked him, was very hopeful on Brian Anderson, and I have a lot of shares of him. So if we do have a season this year, I'm excited to see how he does.
Yeah, that's one of your guys. Like, as you were talking, I started looking at our list some more, and I'm thinking maybe we shouldn't have called these hopeful targets. Maybe it's more these would have been our guys if we could have drafted them all targets. This is like our guy list, because my next guy is going to fall right in line with the brand here. And that's CJ Cron. I probably wrote about him at least twice this year already. I've talked about him tons and tons of times. I just love everything about his overall hit tool. We've seen his barrels increase every year since 2016. We've seen his X stats. He kind of underperformed him last year. .253 average, .277 X batting average. You know, X WOBA .366, WOBA .324, so on and so forth. His best X WOBA bacon he's had, a hard hit rate of almost 45%. While his strikeout rate dropped to a best of 21.6, best last 3 years, he's been close to 26% the last 2 seasons. So nice drop off there in the strikeout rate. The biggest thing with Cron last year, his injuries. He battled a couple different injuries. I believe one was his wrist, and then another one like a hamstring or something. Can't remember off the top of my head right now, but that was the biggest thing that hindered him. He played 125 games. Still at 25 home runs, but the second half of his season, once he returned from injury, wasn't as strong as you would hope for. It was still decent, but not as strong. But people have been saying, you know, going to Detroit's going to crush him and all these things. And yeah, Detroit sucks. I'm not going to say it doesn't. But the thing with Cron, which is very nice, is a 38% pull rate last year. The previous two rates, though, 43.5, 41.9. If you can get back to that 40-plus percent pull rate, that plays just fine in Comerica Park. If you pull the ball there, the ball is going to fly out, and you don't have to worry about it. His ground ball rate has gone up the last 2 years. If that can drop back down and get more fly balls, that could be tremendous as well. The hit tool is outstanding, so there's not much to worry about there. Comerica's not going to hurt him. The lineup there, which we've talked about before, is at least the top half of that Detroit lineup is kind of sneaky, not bad. Which is weird to say. So it's not like he's just hitting in like no man's land there. He still gets to go hit in Minnesota where the ball flies out. He gets to go hit in Chicago. He gets to play a bad Royals team. He has a great division to still thrive in. He's going after pick 200 in drafts right now. People have obviously caught on to him going forward. But this guy is super talented. Every year it's like he doesn't get the respect he deserves, in my opinion, because he keeps getting traded or released and signs elsewhere. And all he does year in and year out is hit the ball extremely hard and give people what they want. You got a 25, 30-plus home run talent. Getting drafted after pick 200 is like a corner infielder or a first baseman if you miss out. He's basically a poor man's Miguel Sano. He's not gonna hit for as much power as Sano, but he's going to hit for a better average, and he's going to help you in counting stats. So the overall power counting stats might be a little lower than Sano. Average will be better. You pick him 100 picks later. So you're getting a very similar player there with the decrease in draft stock. So CJ Cron's my guy. I want him to do well because I want him to prove people wrong that he's not going to produce because he's a Detroit Tiger. So CJ Cron's my number two.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout as well. You know, yeah, the center in Comerica sucks for sure. Like yep. If you hit the ball to center, you're going to have a really hard time hitting it out. But if the pull side, like you mentioned, does play up a little bit, he should play every single day, which has always been, you know, the major struggle for him is getting that consistency and playing time. And I had a tweet earlier on, or when I drafted him earlier on this draft season, I compared him. He compares pretty favorably to Jorge Soler, just from a purely Statcast perspective. Obviously, there's some fairly big differences between him and Soler, generally speaking, in overall value. But I think they're closer than people would, or that their ADP would indicate, I guess, would be a best way, good way to frame it. So I think there's a lot of reason to be hopeful about Crone as well.
Yep, sweet. Who's your number three?
So number three, I don't know if I've been like super heavy on the bandwagon on this guy. I know there's a number of people in the industry who really like him a lot, but I guess choosing him here, I'm planting more of my feet in the bandwagon on Dansby Swanson. But I really like Swanson. You know, he's going later in drafts, and he's really become for me like a pretty trusted source of late speed at the middle infield position for me. I feel like shortstop's very deep. And I feel like he's kind of one of the last guys that I like that can provide a little bit of speed. Like there's other people like a Willy Adames, you know, who's kind of pretty solid overall that's going later than Swanson is, but Swanson's got that nice, little bit of power speed combination. He was injured on July 23rd and he was really bad upon returning. Before that, though, he had lowered his ground ball rate to 37.1%. For the season, career it was 42.7%. So almost 6% dip in ground ball rate, which is really nice. His O swing had returned to its usual levels. So in 2018, it was really bad, but it returned to about 28%, which is similar to what it had been in previous seasons for Swanson. So better than league average right there. And his contact rate dipped slightly, but it came with dramatic improvements in his batted ball quality. And you could see that in career highs in exit velocity, hard hit rate, and then a 6.8% barrels per plate appearance, which is really nice. And so those career highs, when you think about it, so like that's really good for overall for the season. But when you consider the fact that after he returned from his injury, in those 114 plate appearances, he hit 194 with zero home runs. I think they're even more impressive because they're weighed down by a guy who appears to have just returned a little bit too soon from an injury. And so I really like him a lot. And I think even more than that, the Braves lineup is pretty shallow after the top four. Obviously, the top four are four of the best hitters in baseball. But there's an opening in that number five spot. And so I think if he comes out hot, and I think he hit here a couple times in spring training, which doesn't mean anything really, but if he can start out hot, I could definitely see him landing in that five spot behind Marcell Ozuna in that lineup. And that could be just an absolute gold mine from a fantasy perspective. Tons of RBI opportunities there with a bunch of, you know, elite hitters ahead of him who are pretty good at OBP as well. So those are some of the reasons I like Dansby Swanson.
Yeah, I love Dansby Swanson. I can't argue anything about that. If the biggest thing I've had with him is give him a better spot in the batting order and let's rock and roll. Like you said, hitting fifth, he could just be in for a doozy. If he didn't get hurt last year, he was in for a monster season and he would not be getting drafted where he is. I'm not going to say he would have had a Marcus Semien season because that was ridiculous. But he would have had that kind of jump like Marcus Semien had from where they were the year before. He would have been way up there with maybe a top 15 or even higher shortstop, and there would be much validity there. So I like Dansby quite a bit. My third infielder, and this one kind of in the vein of Miguel Sano, it's like the talent is there, and I want it to happen so bad. And we've seen it like really solid one time back in 2018 or even 2016 where he hit 271. Give me Rougned Odor. I want Rougned Odor at his draft cost of 240 over the last, or since spring training got canceled, March 15th. He's going around pick 240 in online drafts on the NFBC. And this is a guy, 30 or more homers, three of the last 4 years, 75 to 80 runs scored. He's like a 75 plus RBI guy, three of the last 4 years. He's getting you double digit stolen bases four straight years. It's just a matter of the batting average, and he's not a big BABIP guy because he gets a lot of fly balls. But the overall metrics are outstanding. A 13.5% barrel rate last year, by far his best. 46% hard hit rate, by far his best, but his worst strikeout rate of 30.6%. So he struck out a lot more, hit the ball a lot harder, bouncy ball. We'll see how that goes. But you even look at his X stats, he underperformed a little bit there. All of his X numbers were much, much better. And you just look at his ground ball rate, it dropped last year. So it was 47, 42, 42, 45, down to 38. Fly ball rate went from 22 to 29, which was nice. But still, he pops up the ball a ton. For a guy with power like Rougned Odor, if you look at like 30-plus home run guys and you look at their StatCast page, pop-ups usually aren't the biggest issue with a lot of them. Rougned Odor, he's got a 9% pop-up rate or higher in four of the five StatCast seasons. That's a lot of wasted at-bats, a lot. So it's not just strikeouts, it's pop-ups. So you combine the pop-ups with the ground balls, thus the very bad BABIP at times. So you got that to worry about there. But if he can just tweak that a little, maybe not strike out as much, even if he doesn't tweak that, just get your strikeout rate back from 30 to 24. That's a huge jump. Keep the hard hit rate going strong. That Texas lineup will be good. Different ballpark, of course. Heck, might be Arizona for all we know. Might be a benefit. But there's a ton of power in this bat. It's just a matter of the batting average. And, you know, I want to say this also, as we – or not we, but the industry as a whole and just fantasy players in general – they say he's always a batting average liability. Yes, he hit 205 last year. 2007, he hit 204. But in 18, he hit 253. 16, he hit 271, 261, 259. In this era of baseball, I know 253 is not great, but these aren't crushing you when you're getting double-digit stolen bases and 30-plus home runs. Like, this is almost the going rate for the non-elite players if you want. You're trading off categories here, especially going to pick 240. There is a ton to like with Rougned Odor. It's probably his last chance because they got Nick Solak. They got other guys they want to play. So he's going to get his chance. If he comes out firing, he's going to be good to go. Even with the 205 average last year, he had a 234 ISO. His best ever, he had 231 and 216. So the production was there, maybe bouncy ball induced. I'm not going to say it wasn't. But he was still hitting the ball very well last year. So that strikeout rate going up, the BABIP dropping to 244, one of the worst he's had ever. Those two combinations were not good. I don't mind a bounce back and pick 240, especially at a very shallow second base position. If you're looking for stolen bases late plus power, I think Rugi's a great pick, and that's just me, but I love him.
Yeah, I have never been a big Rougned Odor fan. I actually, over the last couple seasons, I've gotten a couple bold predictions right in predicting that Shin-Soo Choo would be better than Rougned Odor. So I appreciate him at least for helping me get some bold predictions right. But I agree with you. I mean, I think where he's going right now, the challenge for me has always been cost, right? He went like,
you know,
a couple of years ago, he was going at like pick 40 after the really good season. Then he was going last year around pick 100, I want to say. I love where he's going right now. I actually don't have many shares, which I think is just more indicative of the fact that like I'm pretty I focus a lot on batting average, you know, playing in a lot of overall competitions. And so it's tough for me to take a stab at a guy like that, but I really should because I'm oftentimes chasing power. But the thing that I really like about what he did toward the end of last season, so over his last 80 games, so essentially over the last half season that he had the lowest 80 game O swing of his career at 31.1%. So he was improving his plate discipline at a level unprecedented in his career, right? Which is really, really good. His ground ball rate was also by far the lowest over any 80 game span of his career at 31.5%. So two really good trends, right? Better plate discipline, hitting the ball in the air more. His hard hit rate was also at a 80 game rolling average high over any point in his career at 52.6%. So super elite there. And it didn't cost him in terms of his contact rate. Like his contact rate was pretty steady, you know, around 73% overall contact. So slightly worse than league average, but not terrible. And then again, his in-zone contact rate actually increased while all that was happening to about 82%. So a lot of really good trends with Rougned Odor right here. Maybe he's a guy who in some of my later drafts, I might have to target a little bit more because I really like, you know, diving into him just right here. I really love what I'm seeing in terms of the changes that he's made. So I'm on board. I'm on board as well. I'm hopeful as well on Rougned Odor.
I love it. Love it. Hopeful.
Yeah, we just
as well.
Love the same players, Bubba.
That's what I'm talking about. We love the same players. Yes, exactly. You do the deep knowledge. I do the layman's terms, and we love the same players in the end. It's a beautiful thing.
For sure. I'm going to title this podcast Hopeful Love Fest.
There we go. See, let's bring some positivity to the world. Let's do that.
I mean, who wouldn't want to listen to a podcast called Hopeful Love Fest?
Well, we know that 71% of voters wanted to listen to the Batflip Crazy podcast next to the baseball pods pool. So congratulations on an absolute showing that you had there. You got quite the Twitter's attention that night. I think RotoWire is a little worried about you.
I know. That was so funny. I mean, it's like the most flattering thing on earth. I did not anticipate, you know, I'm a six seed and I beat the 11 seed in the first round, which, you know, every podcast is great, like that I've listened to. I wasn't super familiar with it, but then I went up against Baseball HQ Radio and won this week, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. And so the love and like just the level of support that the podcast has gotten, obviously I think that reflects a lot on you as well, since we share a lot of episodes. But it's just been kind of surreal to have that level of interest. And then, yeah, Scott Jenstead and Jeff Erickson were kind of, they were trying to reframe it as like, oh, well now you're the favorite apparently. So the guys at RotoWire trying to frame our little podcast as the favorite heading into the Sweet 16 is something else. But no, I'm just super appreciative of everybody who has supported the podcast and voted there. It's a great thing that At Baseball Pods is doing just to get, you know, more attention to all the podcasts that are out there. And it's a lot of fun and kind of an honor to represent the independent small podcast in the Sweet 16, and hopefully we can do some damage. I know I'll be rooting really hard for you on Thursday, I believe, in your round of 32 matchup. I know it's going to be a tough one against In This League, but I know the listeners out there are very appreciative of the work you do too.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. So if anybody's bored and wants to vote, I'd much appreciate it because. Yeah, those are my boys, and they have quite the cult following. So it's going to be a tough one on the voting format. But let's get to our hopeful outfielders. And you have some fun ones, and so do I. Who was your first one?
Yeah, so my first hopeful outfielder is Ian Happ. He's the major reason for the hopefulness, I think, is the fact that it looks like he's going to get an opportunity to play every single day for the Cubs in that lineup. That lineup, you know, while they haven't necessarily improved it, it's still got a lot of really good pieces who everybody thinks are really old, but they're still in their prime. I mean, Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber. There's just a lot of really good pieces in that lineup. The pressure should be off him like a little bit just in terms of not having to compete every single day for that playing time, like from the get-go, I think. He's a switch hitter, so he should hit, you know, against both sides of the platoon. And you know, the contact issues have always been the massive hole for Happ, but last year he improved dramatically there. There was a 5% jump in overall contact, a 7% jump in in-zone contact, over his career averages. So some really nice improvements there. And I think when he does make contact, I think the results have been a little bit electric, if you will. I'll use the electric. Electric. I don't know what kind of sound goes along with electric, but like zzz, something like that. But 9% barrels per plate appearance, 95.5 miles per hour on line drives and fly balls. And now those are the two metrics, barrels and exit velocity on line drives and fly balls, that are the most predictive of future success in those areas. And so I really, really like that. And then he's got a little bit of speed. He's got 18 stolen bases in a little over 1,000 plate appearances on his career. So for 500 plate appearances, that's a 9 stolen base pace. So you're really looking at a guy who, if he gets 500 plate appearances, I think can get you around 25 home runs and close to 10 stolen bases. And he could get more than that. I mean, if he does hit at that level and he doesn't struggle right from the get-go, I think he could have even more as long as he stays healthy. And so I think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful and Happ. The batting average could be a little bit of a stickler, especially if that contact rate goes down a little bit. But it, definitely where he's going in drafts, I think he's very much worth it at the ADP.
Yeah, no doubt about it. If he was just a better secured spot in the order, he'd be tremendous, but he's still going to be pretty darn good where he's at in a pretty solid Cubby lineup. So I don't hate that at all. Those adjustments he made when he got sent down last year proved to be pretty darn good. My first outfielder of choice is Franmil Reyes, the Franmil. Huge Franmil guy. I know a lot of people are. He's really picked up steam over the draft season. If you want to get real weird with Franmil, since the 15th, he is going at – oh, come on, update. He's going to pick 115, so he's moved up quite a bit. Quite a bit for Franmil, but there's a lot to like about him. He played 150 games last year between the Padres and the Indians, so his first kind of full dose of action, 37 home runs, hit 249. Again, not a massive average guy for the most part, hit about 250 to 260 in the minors, but the power. The power is what we're here for, 32 homers the year before combined, 25-16, never really played full seasons. But last year, he played 150 games. The year before that, about 140 or so. He came in, I know it's a little late now, it doesn't really matter, but he came in lighter, in better shape. He was running in spring. He said his goal was to steal 5 to 10 bases. I think he already had like 3 steals in spring, and he was looking good out there. Man, if you can throw in 5 to 10 steals on top of 35 to 40 home runs and a plus average, that's tremendous, because the hit tool is not the question. He's had a 15% barrel rate last year. He's about 11.5% the year before. The expo bacon, a 478, a hard hit rate of 51, year before 47.5. Similar strikeout rate, which is it's high at 28.5. Walk rate isn't great at 8.5. It's still not horrible. But last year, one thing that we saw in a big way, his ground ball rate dropped 7% from 2018. Fly ball rate went up 4%. Line drive rate up went 3%. Started pulling the ball even more. He just started hitting the ball. His quality of contact was better across the board last year. And it shows in his ideal contact rate. He's the 22nd player on that list at 47% ideal contact rate. So almost 50% of his batted ball events result in an ideal contact, which is phenomenal. That is really, really big boy stuff. It's one of those. It also shows you with that 28% strikeout rate, if you drop the strikeout rate, a 50% ideal contact rate looks even better because he's putting the ball in play more. Little things like that you can kind of play with these things to look at plate discipline and whatnot. So Franmil, he's basically got the same ideal contact as like Miguel Sano. He's a half percentage point in front of Juan Soto, if that rings a bell to anybody. When he hits the ball, he hits it very, very well. Just kind of work on the strikeouts, but he's still super young. We have seen the strikeout rate not been great, albeit, but it was really only been in the majors. In the minors, he was a low 20% to a high teens guy. His 2 years with the Padres and the Indians were both over 28%. Maybe something that can be adjusted there, lower that back down with comfort. I still have a faith that his plate discipline can improve, and that will just skyrocket everything else. So Franmil is my guy for extreme power. I compared him to a cheaper Aaron Judge. I'd rather have Franmil Reyes than Aaron Judge. That's even before Aaron Judge got hurt. So the argument's kind of not as fun anymore. But you can compare him to Jorge Soler if you want, a very similar player as well. So Franmil's my guy.
Yeah, life comes at you fast. I haven't looked at ADP for quite a long time, but whew, my goodness. Yeah,
he was not up there a while ago.
Mercado, and I know Mercado had the injury to his ankle, I believe, his ankle or his wrist, but wow, that is quite a move up the board for Franmil Reyes. I like him as well a lot. I probably won't have any shares at that price, but I see the reason why people really love him a lot.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about another guy in a minute who's jumped quite a bit since the last time we talked, but who's your second one?
Yeah, so my number two is Teoscar Hernandez. I mentioned his teammate, Rowdy Tellez, but Teoscar looks to have full-time playing time right now after being, really good, actually, towards the end of last season. Over the second half of the last season, I think it was over his last 40 games, I want to say. During that period of time, every single metric that you would want to possibly improved. So his contact rate was up 3.6% to 70.6%, which is not great. That's still not very good just from an overall contact perspective. But compared to where he usually is, that's a huge improvement. His O swing dropped to 26.2% from 30%. So his plate discipline improved. His hard hit rate was up 14%, up at 52.7% over that period of time. And his ground ball rate dropped to 32.4% over the same period of time. His Statcast numbers were through the roof, 95.8 mile per hour average exit velocity. That's right. 95.8 mile per hour average exit velocity over those last 50 batted balls, I believe. 50% hard hit rate, according to StatCast, over that period of time. His expected slugging was 589 with a 277 expected batting average. That includes a 9.2% barrel rate per plate appearance in the second half. That's 228 plate appearances. And the speed, the stolen bases have never matched his 94th percentile sprint speed, but he's definitely good for a handful of them. And so I think if Hernandez is able to translate at least some of those second half improvements, he could be a non-total suck in batting average. And he could hit a ton of home runs and steal 10 bases, right? Last year in about 464 plate appearances, he hit 26 home runs. So you're talking easy 30-plus home run power and then six stolen bases over that period of time. So again, like looking at eight stolen bases, he's projected for between 6 and 9. So let's give him 8. And that's incredibly valuable, especially where he's going, you know, in the late 200s, early 300s, at least the last time. Let's see where he's going now. His ADP is 325 on average. Unfortunately, I was going after him in TGFBI, I believe it was, but somebody drafted him at like 290, I want to say, so I didn't have a chance to get him, which was a little bit of a disappointment. But really like Teoscar as a guy who's going really late and could be a huge boon. And when we talk about guys, you know, when I talk about, like, from roster construction perspective, why I want to focus so much on batting average and speed early on is because I think there are guys like Hap, like Hernandez, like some of the other guys that we're going to talk about that can help you compensate a little bit for power later on in drafts without totally destroying you in other categories.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Teoscar is a beast. I don't think he gets the proper love that he deserves. You definitely gave it to him, where a lot of people don't, and this draft pick his ADP pretty much tells you people don't. He's so talented. He's got a cannon for an arm, which will keep him on the field, which is great in the outfield. But it's just a plate discipline thing with him. He's got the power-speed combo like you're talking about. Playing time, you never know, because there's a lot of players up there you could platoon. But for now, I don't see that happening. They even mentioned, I think you were talking about, that they might use him at first base also, which would be an interesting right-handed player for them to platoon there. So lots of ways for Teoscar to get on the field. So I'm with you there. My second guy is going around pick 272 in the outfield. And it's strictly, if the Rockies wouldn't Rocky, things would be beautiful. That's the best way I can say it, with keeping it as family friendly as possible. Sam Hilliard is an uber talent, a very, very, very talented ball player that would thrive with everyday playing time in Colorado. We've said that year in and year out about a lot of Rockies prospects. And I'm going to get it out of the way right now. He's not a 42 home run guy. He hit 35 homers in the minors, 7 in the bigs. Not a 42. I'm not oblivious to these things. But I'm also realistic that playing in Coors Field or Arizona or wherever the heck he's going to play half of his home games at least or more, he's got 20-plus home run potential. And the reason I'm okay with 20 to 25 homers, he has 20-plus steal upside, and that is tremendous at pick 270. You can get a 20-20 guy at pick 270. And again, we're talking ceilings here. We're looking for hopeful upside players here. The Rockies could screw this whole thing up and he could spend most of his season in the minors for all we know, or on the bench in a platoon, wasting time away. But an everyday Sam Hilliard is going to give you a ton of power. He's going to score runs. He's going to run for days. He's got very good plate discipline in the minors, a walk percentage no lower than 8.4%. In his 27 games with the Rockies last year, a 10.3% walk rate, which is outstanding for a prospect, like really, really good. He had one of his lowest career strikeout rates in the bigs last year over his whole time in major professional baseball with the Rockies. That's outstanding. He's a good average asset. 273 last year, 262, 262, 300. You know, give me 260 or higher if you're going to give me 20-20 after pick 270. I'm in. I could take all those things. Playing in Colorado never sucks. The biggest thing that may suck is being on the Rockies. And that's the best way I can say it, because they're going to platoon him with guys like Ian Desmond because they paid him a bunch of money, or they move, you know, Garrett Hampson or Ryan McMahon out there because they have someone else in the infield they got to play, or Raimel Tapia, something happens. You're basically praying for a David Dahl injury, which sucks because I love David Dahl. You want to pray for injuries. But it's like you look right now at roster resource. He's in a platoon in the outfield with Ian Desmond. That is Sam Hilliard. If Hilliard could somehow sneak into everyday playing time, or at least three quarters of the playing time, which would be great, he's in for a monster year at pick 270. So I'm very hopeful on Sam Hilliard. I'm very realistic, but I'm very hopeful.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I love Sam Hilliard. I actually did draft him in TGFBI when Teoscar got picked. I think I might have actually drafted him a little bit beforehand. So maybe he also should have been on my list there. But yeah, you mentioned some of the numbers, but 114.1 mile per hour max exit velocity. That is really, really good. 96 mile per hour on fly ball and line drives, which is awesome. 8% barrels per plate appearance, which is terrific. And then close to 91 miles per hour on his average exit velocity. That is elite. And then he's got 93rd percentile sprint speed. You mentioned the speed. So I think there's a ton of things to love about Hilliard. And the thing is, even if he's in that platoon, right, even if he gets sat against lefties, you're going to have half of his games in Coors, and most of those games are going to be against lefties. And so you just keep him in the strong side of that platoon, and you have him in when he's at home, and you take him out of the lineup when he's there. And I feel like those guys have a lot of value, especially in deeper leagues, guys that you are pretty confident in, you know what their platoon is going to be, and you know that you're going to want to play them, you know, when they're playing at home, for instance. And so, you know, you may only get a third of his at-bats or something like that, if that is the case. You know, obviously because of the speed, you probably want to have him on the road as well, but either way, like, that's a very valuable platoon bat. You combine that with, you know, somebody, I mean, even draft Desmond maybe, you know, and throw him in on the other side of that, you know, you add those two together, and that's a pretty good baseball player going where those guys are going.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I'm a big, big fan of him, and we're both a big fan of the next guy. So why don't you lead us off with this one?
Yeah. So, Kyle Schwarber, is the guy that I have right here. As the offseason has progressed, I've become more and more a fan of Schwarber. So his average exit velocity, the Statcast metrics are obviously really, really good for Schwarber. They're still loading right now, so I'm waiting patiently for that to happen. But in the meantime, ground ball rate was at 38%. I believe it dipped in the second half of last year. Hard hit rate at a career high. He's always had very good plate discipline. His contact rate is very solid. It actually, the overall contact rate was up 2% to 74%. So he doesn't have those major weaknesses that a lot of those big power bats do have. And I know for a fact, if StatCast page were to load, that his average exit velocity was through the roof in the second half. It really increased dramatically, even over his last 100 batted balls. So it really seemed like there was something that he figured out there in the second half. And so I really like him. He was the guy that I seem to be getting a lot of, you know, in that kind of, there's that power outfield range that's like, that used to be Franmil. Franmil's way up there now, but like Schwarber and Kepler, some other first base type guys, I was getting a ton of him. And so I just really like him. Yeah. So second half, he hit 280 with 20 home runs in 257 plate appearances. I think, you know, you were starting to see him put that together. His K rate dropped 7% about between the first and second half. Just really dramatic improvements in the performance. And so I would be really excited to have Schwarber on any of my teams. And I definitely started to own quite a bit of him as we got later and later into the draft season.
Yep. Schwarber is my number three as well. And I don't have a whole lot more to add because we've talked about him on previous pods quite a bit. You nailed everything else again. His ADP is up to 140, so he's definitely found the rise. Not quite the Franmil rise, but Schwarber and Franmil used to be going like kind of next to each other around pick 200 or so. So they've definitely found their way up the boards quite a bit since we first started talking about them. I guess what I'll say outside of what Toby said about Schwarber is, if you guys just need to smile for a little bit, just go, you know, Twitter search or YouTube search Kyle Schwarber home runs, and they're fun. They'll bring a smile to your face because he looks like a beer league softball player hitting moonshots. It's like a younger Matt Stairs hitting home runs. So if you just want to enjoy some baseball, go look up some Kyle Schwarber home runs. That'll be my piece of hopeful Kyle Schwarber news. go watch that. That's very, very fun stuff to do. Yeah. All right, Toby.
Oh, I was just going to say, I couldn't get his individual StatCast page to load. I should have had the research done ahead of time like I had with the other guys. Sorry, guys. Right out of time.
No, StatCast just went down because my whole thing's a blank white screen. It? Oh, no. Oh, man. No, mine's up now. It just reloaded.
Okay, it reloaded.
I got his page if you need it. Yeah.
Schwarber's max exit velo, 117.6, which is truly elite. Yep. Average exit velocity, 92.7, also truly elite. On line drives and fly balls, close to 98 miles per hour and 9% barrels per plate appearance and a 51.2% hard hit rate. That's, you know, the StatCast version of that. And the thing that I'll say is I mentioned this in the intro to him, but, you know, he doesn't have the same flaws that a lot of those power guys have just in terms of his contact rate, mm-hmm. in terms of his plate discipline. Like, he is turning into a very good hitter. Yes. And so that's one of the reasons that I really love it. I love what he is doing. And so let's just for craps and giggles, his average exit velocity was over 93 miles per hour over his last 100 batted balls. His expected batting average over that period of time was 324. So again, expected batting average is not a predictive metric, but I think it if you look at the improvement in the contact rate, in the place discipline being solid, fewer ground balls, all of those point to a guy who kind of took a next step in the second half of last season.
Yeah, you look at his StatCast page, like you mentioned, his average exit velocity was ninth best in baseball last year. But his max exit velocity, like you said, 117.6. It was 117.1 in 18, 116.1 in 17. So obviously not a fluke. That was 8th, 9th, and 12th best in baseball in each of those 3 years. That's pretty darn good. Pretty, pretty good. He was 13th best in barrels last year in all of baseball. And then you hit on it really well is that he is a pure hitter. He's not just like Franmil and Miguel Sano and some of these other guys I talked about earlier. He's a pure hitter. They were leading him off at one point in time because he's got great plate discipline, and it shows. And right now, I believe he's projected to hit fourth in that Cubs lineup, which would be bananas behind Javi and Rizzo and Bryant and company. Imagine all the runs he could drive in there. But if somehow he sneaks his way back into the first or second spot in the order, I'm gravy with that too. Like, there's a lot to like with Kyle Schwarber. Really, really hard to pass up on a talent like that. And there's a reason he's moving up draft boards, and rightfully so. All right, Toby, I'm going to call an audible because we have some listener questions. I'm going to save our pitchers for next week.
I don't do well with audibles.
I know. I'm going to go to the bullpen.
I've mentioned this before on the podcast.
I'm going to do some language you understand. I'm going to go to the bullpen.
We're going to go to the bullpen here. I handle a call to the bullpen a lot better. There's a reason why I'm not doling out fantasy football advice, you know.
We're going to call to the bullpen, and we're going to do pitchers next week. And maybe we'll add a couple more. We'll do those next week.
I like it.
And we'll get to our listener questions now.
Okay, so let's do it.
This will be fun. We have a few of them, some a little more serious than others. And the first one was from James at James_AG1. He says, "What are you doing with your rosters this time? I'll be honest, I've been neglecting mine, and I imagine I'm not the only one. Really not a whole lot to do, but what are you doing anything with your rosters right now, Toby?
I am not doing anything with my rosters. Most of my leagues, like 85% of them probably, I think I'm in like 14 right now, something like that. Most of them right now don't have FAB or are on NFBC, and I know NFBC has paused FAB for until the season starts back up again. So nothing much to do there. In some of my like my Fantrax Dynasty League, I haven't really done much. In that arena, I imagine that maybe Fantrax is still
they're still running fab.
So yeah. Fab in my two leagues there are probably running. I should probably pay attention to that, especially from a dynasty perspective. But yeah, I'm with you. I just haven't had the motivation to necessarily do that until your question. But it appears as though people are adding and dropping people in my dynasty league, which I probably should have been paying a little bit more attention to. So I will hop on that. Thank you for the reminder, James. But no, I don't necessarily think there's a ton to be doing. I think there are situations like, for instance, like Cole Hamels. I saw that he's now throwing injury pain-free. So a guy like that probably isn't on the waiver wire if you have like IL spots or something like that. But those are the types of situations where you may just want to monitor that just in case it does happen. So that's all I would really say about that is just kind of, monitor those like dynasty leagues, those redraft leagues where there is some fab, just to make sure that you're not kind of caught doing nothing, especially as it seems like there's gaining momentum, at least from both the players and the league, to have a season. I'm still skeptical, but I won't talk too much about that because I want to stay hopeful and optimistic.
There we go.
So just in case there is a season, you don't want to be left kind of in the dust. So just, again, I don't think there's a lot of things that you need to do, but if there are situations where a guy has either increased in value or an injury is less of an impact, you might be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, the biggest thing is dynasty leagues. I've tinkered there. I haven't added or dropped anybody because there really wasn't anybody I was really into adding or dropping, to be honest. But like, we've had to condense our rosters and get stuff ready, and they haven't made us make the final cuts yet. They postponed that till, you know, we have a season or we don't have a season type thing. But and it could be a league by league deal, but I think you're in one with Donkey Teeth and all those guys, and I'm in one with them, and they the fab period started a couple weeks ago. I guess the only thing I'm doing in dynasty and non-dynasty leagues is every once in a while when I get really bored, like I'm telling you, really, really bored, I go back and I look at the waiver wire and I kind of like update my watch list, because as injuries change, as maybe, you know, roster ideas change, when you get the idea of, hey, maybe these middle relievers actually have value to them, I should pay attention to this type thing. Stuff along those lines, just to remind me when fab does start up, here's a list of guys that I might want to start putting bids in on. That's about it. Like, I haven't really gone into anything crazy. And really, I went weeks without looking at anything. But it's just when you get really bored on like a whatever day of the week you get bored on nowadays, I just take a little time and do that. But it's not necessary. That's for sure. All right. Mike Curland. Mike Sleepy K. Curland. He's got a good one here. What, if anything, are you doing to try and better your analysis during this downtime? Are you reading material, looking into players you never thought to look into, taking a breather? If yes to any, please elaborate on specifics, especially the material. Toby, anything that you're doing in this downtime?
Well, Mike's question really made me feel guilty because I haven't really done anything in particular to improve myself as an analyst during this time. To be honest with you, like what I've been doing mostly during this time is just spending a little bit more quality time with the family. I'm pointing to my wife right now. And catching up on some shows, you know, just kind of trying to, like, you know, during the season and during the off season, even this year, more so than in previous seasons, it was fantasy baseball all the time. And I was just hyper focused and always, you know, I had a ton of fab leagues. I was always just trying to, you know, do research, do analysis, share that on Twitter, share that on the podcast, manage my teams. It's kind of just an all encompassing thing. And so I've kind of just been trying to take this time to take it easy, get a little bit more sleep than I usually do. Again, spend more time with the family, all of those pieces. I haven't really been focused on anything particularly fantasy baseball related. Obviously, like, I've been trying to keep in touch with the news and notes that are happening, continuing to read good research that people are putting out, integrating whatever research I've come across. And if there's any like big pieces that I take from that, like, in applying those. But that's just kind of what I like to focus on just generally from a process perspective, is being aware of all of the material that's out there and being put out there, and then trying to figure out what I can use, you know, to better inform my fantasy baseball analysis. So that's what I've been trying to do. There's been some great research, though. I mean, Jeff Zimmerman's had a few articles in the last couple of weeks that have been brilliant about the high fastball, for instance, and just stuff like that. So I'm still continuing to read that and keep track of that. But, you know, generally haven't really been uber focused on making myself a better analyst. I've always had dreams of like learning R and like being able to do my own, like running my own statistical models and things like that. But I don't know if that's for me at this point in time. I think I'm just going to try to take it easy. How about you, Bubba? What have you been up to?
I'm still trying to figure out how to use my proper video knowledge on my computer, and I get very frustrated at times because I'm not technologically sound, but I'm really close now, like really, really close. So that might be happening sooner than later.
Cool. Will we have these podcasts available on YouTube with our pictures?
Eventually, yes.
Eventually, all right.
I will explain more to you on that off the air, but yes, we will eventually. But cool. I'm working on just trying to get my camera set up and everything, because I want to like do it right type situation. Mm-hmm. So working on that. I'm trying to read more articles because I used to kind of skim things. That's why like I wanted to bring up John Metzeler's things. I really want people to read that. I think it's an interesting article, and I just want people to go to like awesome websites. There's tons of them. So like one thing I do for my research is I'm on Twitter a lot, but I'm on the go a lot because I'm still working and doing other things. If I see something that like the title intrigues me, I open the article and I email it to me. So then later on when I'm doing my email, which is hooked up to my personal and work all in one, I see that article in my email and I read it. Like before bed, instead of reading a book or something that night, I'll read a couple articles. Stuff like that, just to get an idea of how I feel about it. And one thing without a lot of news, that's been a lot of basis for my other Bench the Bubba shows, is I just want people to come on and we'll talk more about articles that are intriguing, that might pick the brain, that aren't just analytical articles on players, because we could talk about players as much. I'll talk about players all day long, but you know, they've been talked about quite a bit. So new and interesting concepts. Like you mentioned Jeff Zimmerman, he's had a ton. I have like three different sheets he's created. I keep looking at it every other day, trying to figure out more and more about it. There's tons of great work all over the place. Baseball HQ is great. I know it's a paid service, but I highly recommend it. There's phenomenal work out there everywhere. So I think the biggest thing that I've enjoyed over this downtime is it's given me more time to dig in more and learn more about the reference pages we use, because I've said it on this show many times, I'm still very green to a lot of these things. So I try to learn and read as much as I can to it, because I'm not the biggest statistical genius. Let's just say that wasn't my major in school, stats. So I try to better myself in those respects. I better deeper dives into players like Rowdy Tellez. I liked Rowdy. I wasn't like all in on him. I know you were. So when I did this deeper, like we've done sleepers enough, I'm looking at like deeper sleepers. My article was Evan White, Rowdy Tellez, and Ryan Mountcastle. Two of the three guys have never even played in the big leagues. And they all could be starting for their teams this year. So there's just little things like that to kind of see where there's little niches, because, you know, some guys just to kill time are looking at best ball drafts right now. And players like that become more and more interesting. So just little things along those lines. Like, I'm not going to try to be crazy. I'm not trying to go reinvent the wheel. I'm just trying to take a deeper dive into things, because at worst, the way I look at it, if for some godforsaken reason we don't have a season this year, I'll be ready for next year. So we're good. And we'll just keep moving along that direction. But yeah, I've been hanging out with the wife. We decorated the baby's room. We're continue. Now, the one downside of her being home all the time, Amazon through the roof. That's one thing that's a lot of fun for the baby's room. But yeah, that's been fun. We have watched a lot more shows that we haven't been able to because she's home more, doing her school from home, which is cool. But yeah, it's been more just deeper dives and trying to learn more stuff that I hadn't had the time to learn before.
Yeah, and I'll just say, Bubba, you are to be applauded, I think, of everybody in the industry. I mean, you have been producing probably the most or close to the most content. I mean, every night with a new podcast, I really, it's pretty incredible all the content that you're always putting out there and keeping fresh and giving people opportunities to share their information. And it's really awesome.
I appreciate that. I really do. It's fun. I like doing it. It helps me. Everyone's got their way of coping with things. This helps me cope. So this is why I do it. I can talk baseball all day long, and it helps me a ton. So let's go to the next listener question. Steve Wehmer at Stevie M-E-R. My keeper league is running waivers every week. Every time I go to the report, I wonder why, and then forget about it every week. Just thought it'd be funny to mention it because he put it out to us because we kind of just talked about it. Like, yeah, if you want to go play with it, yeah, but really, what do you change? Like, because at least for your dynasty league, right, Toby, you already had your draft. At least you're just kind of waiting now, right?
Yeah. We had our first year player draft, and I traded every single one of my picks because I didn't have any beyond the. I think my first pick was in like the third or fourth round for Cesar Hernandez.
Oh man! Well, hey, that's a baller, especially in a dynasty league. Yeah, OBP dynasty. Heck yeah! That's why you win leagues, Toby. That's why you win leagues. All right, James has another one, and this is a fun one. @James_AG1, who already had the first question we went in on. He's got a non-fantasy question. And I don't know if you saw it all, Toby, but it was fun because Justin Mason started out with a comment about the Dodgers haven't won in like over 1,100 games, haven't won a World Series. And then I quote tweeted it and said, now I know why Justin Mason and I are such close friends, beat LA. So then Brock Ness Monster gets on Brock Miller and says, I'm really basically, we were having fun going back and forth on this. And it was, Brock was like mad. And then Justin's like, well, don't be mad. It's only been like 30 years and like all these things back and forth. So James, you look at his picture. He's an LA Dodgers fan. He asks this. He says, I've got a non-fantasy related question sparked by Justin Mason's totally uncalled for trolling of the Dodgers World Series drought. In the next 10 years, LA has four more NL West titles, two, whatever. So that's not the part of the question. His question is, can we call the 30-year run one of the best in sports history? From 2000 to 2030, he's predicting that they'll have 14 NL West titles, three wild cards, five pennants, and zero World Championships. My question to you, Toby, if you're a fan of a team that won that much but couldn't win the big one, would you think that's great?
Oh, man, that is a tough question. I feel like there's a lot going on there because it's kind of like there if is. I had it, if you're almost disappointed because there's been so much success that it mm-hmm. almost feels like terrible luck that you haven't. And so, you know, that there's been amazing moments throughout those seasons, you know, winning the pennant, like just there's been a number of really exciting games and moments and things that you just remember forever as a fan. And so that's awesome, but it's almost like there's been so many of those without the big one that it's like, at this point, can you really enjoy it until you get the big one? Whereas if your team wasn't as successful, like doing those things would mean a lot more at this point, I guess. And so I do think, I mean, you know, what they've been able to accomplish has really been quite incredible. As a fan, if you were to say, hey, you're going to win, you know, 14, if you're going to win that this over the next 30 years, but you're not going to win a championship, I probably wouldn't take it because that's what you play the game to win championships. And so should they be, I don't think they should be frustrated at the team or the players for their failure to do that. I think they've done everything that they possibly could potentially. I mean, at least recently in order to achieve that. But as a fan, I think you want to win a championship and that's the goal every year. It's just like in fantasy baseball, like you play to win and second place is great. But you play to win the game. And so I think I would overall be disappointed. Like I wouldn't take that if you were to offer that to me tomorrow, like your favorite baseball team, which is essentially my fantasy baseball team. It's going to win 14 division titles and five NL championships over the next 30 years, but you won't win the big one. Will you take that? I would say no.
Yeah, they make a movie about this. It's called 27 Dresses, where she's always the bridesmaid. I don't really think you always want to be the bridesmaid. That's kind of what the Dodgers would be in this scenario. They'd be a runner-up to the big day every time. And that's at least five out of – like that's a lot of times for a baseball team. 14 division title, almost every – like almost half the time they won their division. They made the playoffs like almost 20 out of the 30 years. And you couldn't win the big one. That's a rough go. I would not be happy about that. It'd be fun watching your team win every year because it gets boring watching the team lose every year. But I would not be happy about that, especially when the team to the north wins three titles in 5 years.
That's what I was going to say, Bubba.
Yep,
I was going to say, I'd rather have the Giants for the last 30 years.
Yep, that can't be fun. And trust me, for like the first 25 years of that, I was miserable. I thought 2002 was the only chance I'd ever have in my entire lifetime. And in 2002, I was graduating high school, and I thought it was already over. I was like, nope, never happening again. Dusty Baker blew it, left them out there too long. It's over. But no, miracles happen, unless you're a Dodgers fan. So, I would rather have the championships. And the thing I wanted to tell James, and I'll leave this question for James, and James, let me know your answer on Twitter. Would you rather be the Dodgers, who make these runs year in and year out and can't win the big one, or would you rather be the Kansas City Royals, who are basically a losing franchise year after year, but go to two World Series and win one, and then they're horrible again? Would you rather be the Royals or the Dodgers? Think about that one. So that's my scenario for James. I'd like to hear an answer for that later. All right. Last question we have, and it wouldn't be a Bubba and the Batflip podcast or even a Batflip crazy podcast in general without a great question from Cody McDonald at Comac Do. Thoughts on 2020 format, assuming June 1st start, or let's just assume 81-game regular season, because they can still do that in July, regular season, followed by expanded playoff format, more teams and rounds, call it the race for the World Series. What's your thoughts on that? If there's a 81-game season, more teams in the postseason, kind of a sprint to the playoffs, what's your thoughts on a season like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it depends on how they configure things. I know in the most recent MLB proposal, or not really proposal, but what Jeff Passan reported on that was shared widely, you know, they talked about having a lot of doubleheaders, seven inning doubleheaders. And so I think, you know, what's less important is, I mean, the number of games really impacts the variance, right? And so I think as a result of that, like, there's going to be more luck one way or another that factors into this. There's, regardless of how the season happens, there's going to be more luck just because there's less certainty about how players are going to respond to, you know, like if they play in Arizona, there's going to be, how do we integrate park factors into that? Like, how do we get an understanding, especially if we don't know exactly how many games they're playing at each stadium or what the impact of each stadium is going to be? How are players going to react, like, emotionally as human beings to being separated from their families, if that is something, you know, that ends up happening, right? If they do like the bubble proposal where they're separated for 4.5 months from, you know, their significant others, their kids, their lives overall, how are they going to be able to cope with that? Then there's also, you know, like the whole just, you know, sitting in the stands instead of in the dugouts and doing like physical spacing, you know, on the field, like how does that impact the way that the game is played? And how does that impact just the emotional element that, while as an analytics guy, I focus on that, like there's the emotional component to being a human being and playing the game as well. So there's just so much more uncertainty as a result of that. And I think as a result of that and the shorter number of games, the smaller sample size, there's going to be more variance. And so I really think that that's the big thing. But if there are like actual structural changes to the game, for instance, like if they do seven inning games instead, like then, you know, and there's more doubleheaders, then yeah, some of these middle relievers may have a little bit more value because they might get that win. You know, it's a lot easier to get high quality three innings out of a guy than it is to get six. We all know that. And so that might give middle relievers a little bit more, value. But do they change the way that wins are allotted if the games are only seven innings pitched? Is it now, you know, four innings to qualify for the win, right? There's so many different elements there that just change the fundamentals of the game. And I think the key is going to be, once we know what that proposal is, to recognize there's going to be more variance. So as we go into this, there's going to be more luck involved, and that could be luck in your favor, you know, for the good. It could be luck in your favor for the bad. You know, and you just got to recognize that, but then you're going to just have to adapt pretty quickly to changes to the game and be able to interpret how those changes are going to impact, you know, value for different players and integrate that into your draft strategy and your roster construction strategy. And so I think that's going to be a real challenge because there is so much uncertainty and things are obviously going to be changing. You know, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they did something similar to what they proposed, that if spring training, like they actually made adjustments to what the initial proposal was during spring training based on how games go, and they say, see things kind of rolling out. So those are the types of things that are just, there's too many permutations to really know exactly how it'll happen. Just know that there's going to be more luck involved in the season if it's shorter. And yeah, even still, like with the way the season is now, there's going to be more luck involved regardless.
Yeah. The shorter the season, the better the chance for these playoff teams. You could have all kinds of craziness happen. I've seen guys like to gamble on playoff chances, like betting the teams like the Blue Jays. It makes sense. Teams like that, the Padres, the Diamondbacks, like some of these teams that are like close but not quite there on a shortened season where you just got to run hot for a little bit, magic can happen, like big time possibility. This might be the A's finally can have their chance to just go get them type thing. There's lots of ways to look at it. From a fantasy perspective, I think the Passan article, I was tweeting about it today, I almost feel like it was the MLB like giving them this information, telling them to put it out there. Let's see how people react to it, and then we can adjust from there. I think this is a very fluid thing. I think the biggest takeaway that I have from this is that the players the owners, and even healthcare people are at least working together to figure something out. That it's not just like it is a money grab in the end because these owners are greedy and they want their darn money, and that's ugly about it. But they're at least working together to try to figure out the best possible scenario instead of just throwing it against the wall and hoping it sticks. So I was happy to see that. It at least gives more optimism than it felt like there was a few days ago. Let's put it that way. So that's what I think the biggest takeaway from the past articles for me. I think a lot of those things will change, like you were mentioning. I think once they realize, you know, seven inning double hitters are tough. As hot as it is in Arizona, you have to figure out certain ways to do things. Timing of games. You can't play every game at Chase Field, so you're going to have to play a lot of outdoor games. I sent Derek Cardi a tweet today asking if he could do bat projections for the Heat, and he's kind of actually working on that already. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out because, you know, if you're drafting Rockies guys, but they all play in Arizona, well, those guys don't have the advantage anymore because that ball's going to fly in Arizona. When in talking to, like, Bogman and the Welsh down there, during the summertime, it averages 115 as a high. It's like 100 degrees even until 8 or 9 o'clock at night certain nights. Like, it's the ball's going to fly. And so pitchers might not go as long into games. Pitchers might not be as strong in games. Like, there's a lot of things that could change the way you look at things. But that's the fantasy perspective. For real life, I think it'll be good to have baseball back. I think it opens up possibilities for a lot more teams having a chance, and we'll have to see where it goes. And I hope it's a real discussion we have because that means we're having baseball. So that would be a fun situation there.
Absolutely.
All right, Toby, that wraps us up. Any final thoughts on Bubba and the Batflip 32?
No, I mean, this was really fun, Bubba. I think going back into the player pool and really getting in depth, getting into the nitty gritty of why we like these players and why we're hopeful has actually made me a little bit more hopeful. And you know, it's got me a little bit fired up and really excited, hopefully, that there could be some baseball this year in some format, just for us to, you know, like you mentioned, like, you know, people are struggling right now. There's a lot of grief for a lot of reasons that people have. And so just having something to, you know, bring back that enjoyment, and the podcast definitely does that for me, but having baseball back, giving people that thing to cope a little bit more with everything that's happening in the world right now, I think would be amazing. So let's definitely hope that that does happen. But I appreciate, as always, joining you on the podcast this week and getting fired up for some fantasy baseball.
No doubt about it. I have a couple things. If you guys could please vote for me on Thursday, much appreciated. It would really mean a lot because I don't have confidence at all going against ITL. Like, these boys are...
let's do it for Bubba.
They're the ITL Army for a reason. Let's just put it that way. Prospect One almost beat RotoWire. That is ITL. Just going to throw that one out there right now. So we'll see how that goes. And then on a more serious note, just stay safe out there. Love your family and hug them and kiss them. And a thing that I've been really trying to do, and if you guys can, if you have the means to do it, I know not everybody does, try to like support some of your local businesses and restaurants because they are struggling. When you walk inside those places, it's pretty doom and gloom sometimes. And just tell people like the grocery stores and stuff, tell them thank you because they are pretty beat up out there. But if you just give them a little thank you and a little conversation, they light up quite a bit. It means a lot to them because they think we're just kind of not caring about them. They're doing a lot right now. So just throw that out there. Give them a little extra thank you here and there, and it goes a long, long ways. So, all right, everybody. Definitely. Bubba and the Batflip.
Bubba, you're What's great.
No, you are.
Love fest complete.
There we go. Our hopeful love fest is complete. Bubba and the Batflip episode 32 in the books. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. you'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.